Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am very pleased to welcome, for her very first appearance on the Broadway Radio Show, Juliet Ewing. Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Donald. So nice to see you. Thank you for having me.
Juliet is here because she has a new album out called Simply Swonderful, The Magic of Gershwin. And it was released on September 12th on Lexicon Classics. And it's a wonderful album of Gershwin tunes. But before we get to the album, I thought it would be a good idea for you to give the listeners a little bit of background on yourself so they get to know you, kind of like where you grew up, how you got into singing and performing, and how you kind of eventually made the move to New York City to pursue your career. So kind of let the listeners know who you are.
Absolutely. I grew up in the lovely state of Michigan, which is adore, and I visit very often. I grew up in a really musical household. My parents were really into the opera and classical music, and my dad's on the board of the Detroit Opera, and my mother was a local classical singer. But I grew up with a lot of opera, a lot of Maria Callas, all the operas, so lots of Puccini. But in the background, I snuck in. My mother had a couple little cabaret albums. She had a Bobby Short Loves Cole Porter album and the Bette Midler album, her first album. So I was exposed to all these things. And a little bit of bossa nova. My parents had the old Sergio Mendez and Brazil 66 album. So I kind of found that in a dusty corner and kind of learned a lot of music that way and a lot of bossa nova. But I grew up singing. I went to the University of Michigan School of Music, graduated in musical theater. Then I moved to New York and made my way. And, you know, trembling, I arrive in New York City wondering what's going to happen to me. And fortunately, I did get to work a lot. I spent a lot of time working in big Broadway tours in Europe, where I did a big show called 42nd Street. So I did that role of Anytime Annie, tap dancing all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then I did... And in between then, I did a lot of other regional shows. And then I got which is my favorite show. I did Crazy for You, the George and Ira Gershwin musical. And I did that. I got to New York after it had been on Broadway and it had been touring. So I did the international tour all over Germany and Switzerland. And I loved it. And I played the wonderful character of Irene, who sings Baby, which I put on my album. I said, how can I do this song? I did it like 300 plus times all over Europe. I did a couple productions in the United States and Houston Theater Under the Stars and in Massachusetts. So I revisited that song when I got back into the Gershwin, and we turned it into a little fun bossa nova, which was fun because it marries my love of that music with the classic Gershwin.
Naughty baby, who will tease you? I can show the way, I know the way to please you. If you're wanting a beginner, I shan't do. I can make a saint a sinner when I walk. You find the simple kind of rather slow, dear. Then you ought to try a naughty one, you know, dear. But you'll never meet another who will be a naughty baby, naughty baby, just like me. You in a world, one who will be always sweet and gentle. I am not that kind of girl, but if you'd prefer a rather swift one, if you think you'd like to run around with a bright right one. I am just the right one. Naughty baby, naughty baby, who will tease you? I can show the way and know the way to please you. If you're wanting a beginner, I shan't do. I can make a saint a sinner when I want you. If you find a simple kind of rather slow deal, then you ought to try a naughty one, you know.
My brother and sister and I were big musical theater fans. And back then, before you had streaming, back in the 80s, we would stay up late and read the TV guide and find the great Broadway musicals that were on Channel 50 back in Detroit. And it was the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies like Shall We Dance? Mm-hmm. It has the great song Slap That Bass, which I've recently gone back and listened to again. It's still such a great version that Fred Astaire does. And, you know, Top Hat, all those wonderful movie musicals. So we really got to know that music through the late middle of the night watching these movies and through our grandparents who loved that music. So we were kind of the nerdy kids outside Detroit who were staying up late listening to, you know, George and Ira Gershwin songs. We were those kids. And when I had an opportunity to go back and revisit those songs, I realized in the back of my head, I knew all the lyrics to all these songs. And I couldn't figure out, why do I know all the words to Let's Call the Whole Thing Off and Shall We Then Slap That Bass and Shall We Dance and all these things are looking up. I knew them all from the old Broadway shows or the Broadway movie musicals. So after I came to New York, I toured around Europe. I eventually did the national tour of the Broadway show Footloose, which I also did on Broadway, playing a country singer. So I kind of did all those things, a lot of regional theater. And then I took some time off because I have children and I wanted to raise them. So I kind of was around the theater and music scene and doing a little bit of singing here and there and some directing. And then out of the pandemic, I had an opportunity to have a nice gig at Tavern on the Green here in New York City. And I got together with my new friend, arranger and pianist, Ron Frodos, who did all the arrangements on my album. And we were kind of thinking, what can I sing? And I kept going back to the George Gershwin songs that I loved so much after doing Crazy for You and listening to them. And I decided, you know, we should just do a cabaret of all George Gershwin songs. It was doing a solo cabaret was kind of like the last hill to climb for me. I feel like I'd done a lot of things. I've done really big theaters and Broadway and tours and small theaters, but I had never done a solo cabaret show. To me, that was kind of the most terrifying thing because it's really just you
talking
about yourself, right?
Well, but talk a little bit about that because it is sort of, in some ways, for some people, it's a natural progression to do that because it's you're more exposed, but it is sort of the ultimate performance space. In a way, it is.
And it's great because I was scared of it just because I think as a much younger person, I was like, I have nothing to say. But after you've lived a life and toured the world and have a family, you have a lot to say. And I found that I was very at ease. It was really like being in the theater again, but you could tell your own stories and you could choose your own material, things that you really connected with. And that was really fun. Instead of having to sing maybe the same song, you know, 300 times, that you really have to essentially sing the same for the orchestra and your fellow, you know, coworkers, you choose your own material. And I felt at first I was scared. And then I worked with my arranger who had done a lot of cabaret work. And he just said, well, tell a story, you know, write a little story about this. And then we ended up putting new lyrics in some of the songs and telling fun stories. And I realized I had a lot of great stories from my life. I just had never had a chance to really share them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't treat it like some people treat cabaret like very deep, you know, cathartic therapy. And mm-hmm. I didn't want to do that. I love to entertain. I love to sing positive, cheerful songs. I like to lift people up. Of course, as singers, we love occasionally the super dramatic songs, and we did some of that, but I wanted to be really uplifting and highlight these songs. So I worked on the cabaret. I ended up doing it, I think, 5 times in New York City at Don't Tell Mama, which is like the iconic great cabaret space. It sold them all out. And then out of that, we talked about doing an album. I felt like I really wanted to keep this music alive. The arrangements were great. They were kind of jazzy arrangements with a trio, just a piano, bass, drums, and me. And we went about, you know, putting the album together. And I hired a wonderful producer who's a kind of like extremely well-known in the New York cabaret scene, Ted Firth. He's Michael Feinstein's band leader and arranger. Mm-hmm. He produced the album and he played on several of the tracks and did those arrangements. So it was great to have a really experienced guiding hand. And it was a great experience. You know, I'm so happy with the product. And I had so much fun doing these songs. And the interesting thing is people think maybe they don't know Gershwin, but as soon as you hear some of the songs, you realize, oh, of course I know It's Wonderful. Of course I know Summertime. Of course I know I Got Rhythm. But you just maybe didn't know that you knew them. So that's been really fun kind of to reintroduce those songs to some of the younger generation and, you know, just my friends and family. So
right. And just to kind of go back to the performing in cabarets and nightclubs, it's one of the things I always find when I talk to people who have made that transition from doing theater to now doing the cabaret scene is both of them are relationships with an audience, because one of the things about that's great about performing in theater is that you do work off the energy from the audience and your people you're working with on stage. But it's kind of a different relationship when you're doing a solo cabaret show that you have with your audience. You just, because you are alone and you are telling more intimate stories about yourself usually, and you are but you are still feeding off of an audience. And you're also feeding off an audience because it's an intimate room that you can see much better than you can in a theater. So talk a little bit about the relationship with the audience and how you feed off of an audience in a cabaret space.
Well, I think you can tell the energy of the room immediately. As soon as they, in my case, announced my name and you walk on stage, you can feel it. In fact, the first time I did the show, it was wild and raucous because a lot of people, the first time seeing me, and you're like, it's like euphoria. And it took a while to actually to settle down for me because I'm like, oh, I see these friends and family, mm-hmm. and it's like this craziness. And then you settle into it and you give, you know, the show you want to give. The more I did it, the more fun I had because I was calmer and I knew certain points worked really well. You don't really know when you're rehearsing it if the story's hit, if your timing is right or is it off, but you learn that. So by the second or third time I did it, I felt like I really understood what people wanted. And I also felt like, you know, you could feel their enjoyment and you could feel where things were going. You could tell where their interest was and if they were waxing and waning in that. So I feel like you adjust your performance to that. Whereas in theater, like doing a Broadway show, you have to do exactly what you're doing and you have to hit the marks and you can't be delayed or whatever. But I felt like it was more casual in some ways where I could have a little more leeway. It's the arrangements are set, but working with just a trio, you have more flexibility to, if you wanted to extend something, if you want to change your scat a little bit, or if you somebody drops a measure or two or whatever, you kind of, it's more casual that way. And mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, people, you've seen shows where people forget a line or drop whatever. And people, the audience is always entertained by that. They're always like, oh, I feel like I'm part of a creation here. And they forgot this, but they came back to it. So I felt like it is more intimate. It felt more like being in someone's living room. And you also have the responsibility though, because it's really just you and it's more responsibility than say being at a Broadway show with a big ensemble or doing one number and you're off 3 minutes later. But this mm-hmm. is like an ongoing conversation relationship with people.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I really enjoyed it. Whereas sometimes I play in jazz clubs or in, you know, jazz bars and hotels, et cetera. They're not really necessarily focused on the stories you're telling. You know, they like the music, they'll listen, they won't. But in a cabaret, it's really focused. And I felt like that helped me even deliver a better product than when I started out, just the focus from the audience.
How glad the many millions of Timothys and Williams would be to capture me. But you had such persistence, you wore down my resistance. I fell, and it was swell. You're my big and brave and handsome Romeo. How I won you, I shall never, never know. It's not that you're attractive, but oh, my heart grew active when you came into view. I've got a crush on. Sweetie pie, all the day and night time, hear me sigh. I never had the least notion that I could fall with so much emotion.
What is it about, for you, what is it about Gershwin that attracts you?
Well, besides the nostalgia factor, I feel like those lyrics really are so important to me. Coming from theater, not from a straight jazz background, it's more about the lyrics than about the melody. And I feel like those lyrics are so honest and so truthful, and they're so succinct. They get to the point right away. For example, and I feel like it is still contemporary, even though some of these songs are maybe 100 years old. For example, I've Got a Crush on You. I mean, people say that all the time. My teenager says it. I'm crushing on somebody. I've got a crush on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that's delivered, the way it's structured, the lyrics, I feel like it really gets to the heart of people. A song like, Embraceable You, very simple. Don't be a naughty baby, come to mama do. I mean, that says a lot in that lyric, and I feel like people really connect to it. So I feel like they're honest, they get to the heart of somebody, and they move people. I mean, one song I couldn't put on my album because it just wasn't room. I do Someone to Watch Over Me. And I remember doing that song live and having a young woman who was in her 20s. It was a casual situation and it was Father's Day. And I started singing that song and she whipped out her iPhone and she FaceTimed her father. And she said, "Dad, listen, they're playing our song." And I thought, wow, these lyrics really still work for people. They understand it. And I feel kind of a connection with Ira Gershwin. It's so funny. I feel like having read some of his books and read about him and seeing his pictures, I feel like he's kind of a, seems like a warm, kind of funny looking guy. And often the lyrics you hear are, you know, "Although I may not be the man some girls think of as handsome," like often he's referring to, I think, himself when he's talking about, "I may not be the studly guy that my brother George Gershwin was." Apparently, he was a big ladies' man. But I feel like they're honest and I can relate to them. I feel like I know who this person is. I know who he's writing for. And I just feel kind of a kinship.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's, you know, and to, let's be honest, putting out, you know, a Gershwin album is not an easy task because there's been a lot of Gershwin albums.
Exactly.
By a lot of different singers in a lot of different genres. And I mean, your thoughts going in, I mean, to me, if it was me, I would be thinking, how do I make my Gershwin album sort of unique? And, yeah. And to not only for myself, but for people who are going to listen to it or going to buy it. So what were your thoughts going in? I mean, I know it was based on the show you were doing, but it's a bit of a daunting task because Gershwin is Gershwin. And there's a lot of Gershwin collections out there. And
a lot of Gershwin collections.
Yeah. So what were your thoughts?
Well, the first thing I wanted to do is I didn't want to accidentally copy any of the greats. You know, I'd listened to Ella Fitzgerald's album long ago, but I didn't go back and listen to it again. I said, I don't want to accidentally copy the stuff she's doing, or I don't want to do that. So we went back to the lyrics and we went back to the feeling of the song. For example, Naughty Baby, which I mentioned earlier when I did it in Crazy for You, we didn't want to do it exactly the way it was. And the more we thought about it with my arranger, Ron Drotus, we thought, this is kind of like a fun, sassy song. Let's do it a little bit differently. We put it in as a bossa nova. I said, I don't think it's been done. That song hasn't been recorded that I could find that often. I saw, I think Ella did it and Sarah Vaughan did it, but there's not a lot out there. So we decided to take that song and do something different with it and make it more fun and slap that bass. It's not often recorded. Of course, I wanted to do it just with the bass. So that had been done, but I wanted to do it my way. And I felt like that worked. The one song that was really daunting in a way was we wanted to do Summertime, of course. And the lyrics in that case are attributed to DuBose Hayward. So we thought about it and I said, you know, I want to go back to that song, how it was first written, which is more as a lullaby. In the opera Porgy and Bess, it's kind of serious. And you often hear a Summertime done as kind of an up-tempo swing, like a summertime, living is easy. But I wanted to do it really authentically. So in that case, we stripped it down to the beginning and we told a story with that song. In my mind, it's really about, you know, a mother singing to her child, but then seeing this child develop and seeing this child get older, become an adult, in the end, fly away. And it became a really beautiful, poignant scene. And when we worked on it, we were so thrilled. We had goosebumps. We're like, this is going to be amazing because I don't think it's been done this way. It went back to maybe the roots of the song, how I think it was first developed and how it spoke to me. And I realized when I did it live in my cabaret, it was the most powerful song out of the whole evening. And people often, honestly, were very teary-eyed. They were crying a little bit at the end of it because, you know, the beauty of the scene and the song and the lights and the set, and it really brought it back to that. So I think in that case, that song really worked the way we wanted it to be. Other songs we took really kind of as pure jazz things. We did But Not For Me. We put a scat in there. Swonderful is a little scatty. We wanted to do it a little more swingy, a little bit that way. There's also another song that has not been recorded very often called Lorelei. Mm-hmm. And I came across this song long ago on a Bobby Short album, which I can't even find on Spotify, but I had it as a kid. It had a lot of weird Gershwin songs in there that you never really hear. But I remember that song. And I remember when I was auditioning for Crazy for You, they're like, bring a Gershwin song. I'm like, well, I can't sing anything from the show. Like, that's weird. So I remembered that song and I worked it up and it like took me 5 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, this song fits me like a glove. And I hadn't sung it since then, which is a long time ago. And we went back to it, and I worked on Ted Firth, my producer, actually played on that, and I wanted to do like a sultry swing. In that case, that song hasn't even been really recorded. It's not really out there. People don't necessarily know it.
Back in the days of knights in armor, there once lived a lovely charmer, swimming in the Rhine. Her figure was divine. She had a yen for all the sailors, fishermen and gobs and whalers. She had a most immoral eye. They called her Lorelei. She created quite a stir, and I want to be like her. I want to be like that gal on the river who sang her song to the ships passing by. She had the goods and how she could deliver. The She used to love in a strange kind of fashion, with lots of hey, hoity ho, hidey hi. And I can guarantee I'm full of passion, like the Lorelei. I'm treacherous, yeah, yeah. Oh, I just can't hold myself in check. I'm lecherous, yeah, yeah. I want to bite my initials on a sailor's neck. Each affair has a kick and a wallop. For what they crave, I can always supply. I want to be just like that other
was a fun thing about putting together the album. I thought, you know, I want to have a few songs that are not the normal, the regular George Gershwin songs that everybody knows. And in that case, it was Slap That Bass, Naughty Baby, and Lorelei. I felt like, you know, these are different that will help set it apart a little bit, because people know a lot of the other songs. If you know Gershwin or you know musical theater, you probably know these songs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah,
our...
I was going to say that because, you know, you've got, when you're putting together a Gershwin album, you've got an enormous catalog of songs to pick from. And what I like about your album is that it is a good balance of standards that people are going to be familiar with. But there's also some nice Gershwin gems in there that people are not going to be familiar with, like The Lorelei and Naughty Baby, things like that, that people are going to, and they're scattered throughout the album so that they come across, when you're listening to the album, they pop up and you go, oh, this is something a little bit different.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, because it was so funny when I had put together the set or the song list, this I call it the set list. I really spent a lot of time. I said, not everyone really listens to full albums anymore. They listen to a single. Everyone's like, just put out a single. I said, well, yeah, I will do that. But for the rare person who listens to the whole album, where you find it on Spotify or Amazon, whatever, and you put it on, or if you buy the CD, you'll be able to hear a little bit of a story like old albums used to be. You could put it on and it flows well. It's not ballad, 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 and swing, swing, swing. It's kind of scattered around. And to your point, you know, there are some gems in there. And I opened the album with Swanderful, which is, you know, in the title of the album, one of the most famous songs. It really is fun. And as you go through, you get a little bit more unusual songs. And so I appreciate that you noticed that.
Well, as my listeners know, and I am preaching to them all the time, but I preach to them all the time saying, you know, I know with cast recordings, most listeners will sit and try and listen to a cast recording from beginning to end because, you know, it is telling some sort of narrative. There is a narrative flow to a cast recording. But I always remind them that if you're listening to a vocalist recording, there is also oftentimes a narrative flow built in because there is sequencing involved, and the vocalist and the producer have sat down and the songs are in an order, a specific order, because they've designed it that way. They want to take you on a musical journey. So it's important for you to sit down and dedicate the time to listen to the album from beginning to end, all in one sitting, and just take the time to do it, because they want to take you on this little journey that they've created on their album. And so I always do that. I always sit down and listen to it from beginning to end, because there is some reason for the songs being in the order that they're in, you know, and it's always been that way.
It is. And I also feel like it's kind of the reward, the dessert at the end. You got I got Summertime at the end. If you spend the time, if you really enjoy music, you'll get to the end. You'll have like kind of the more serious songs. But, you know, I give that kind of attention to every live set I do too, even though, you know, I have like four places that I play pretty regularly each month, but I always change up the set. I do a set list. And then as I'm feeling what the audience is interested in, I'm always changing that too. I think it's really important to, you know, take that into account, your listener on the album or your listener live in person. I think, you know, it's your duty to do that, to feed off that, not just get stuck. So
right.
I'm glad you paid attention.
Yeah, and I have, and I really have to give you a lot of credit and compliment you on the album, because I will be completely honest, when I went to sit down and listen to the album, I was a little wary because I was like, it's another Gershwin album. Is this one going to be different? But this one really surprised me because it's really terrific. And the reason it's terrific is not only the selection of songs and the arrangements, because the arrangements are really, really terrific and fun, but also because what comes through the most on the album is your voice and all the joy and fun you are having in every lyric and note that you are singing on this album. Your joy and the fun you are having singing the songs comes through. And you don't always get that when you hear some vocalist albums. I mean, sometimes you hear that they're getting pleasure out of the album, but not on every track sometimes. Sometimes you feel that they're just kind of getting through the song, but there's a lot of like energy that you get from your voice when you listen to the album, which I really loved. So congratulations. I thought that was fantastic.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. And I do love these songs so much. And I never get tired of singing them. I've sung a lot of them, like I said, when I've done shows, you know, 300 times. I've heard them when I did Crazy for You. Some of these songs were in the production. I just never got tired of the music. And I've done other shows and pop shows and Broadway shows that, you know, after a few shows, you just really don't ever need to hear this music again. I mean, it's like annoying. You're like, here we go again. But I do remember sitting backstage when I was doing Crazy for You and listening to the band play between the scenes. They play some of the orchestral George Gershwin. a little bit of the piano preludes, a little bit of American in Paris kind of stuff. And I loved it so much. And I never get tired of the music or the lyrics. And I think really good songs with wonderful lyrics, you can always find something new.
Right.
Because, for example, the song But Not For Me, which was in Crazy For You, and I think I had a little FOMO, a little envy, because I never got to sing that song. I finally sang it as an adult. I sung it as a young woman in college, but it's very different now when I sing it as a mature woman. I have children, I'm married, but this lyrics still work, and that's what I think is so great. You have your own perspective. As a cabaret artist, you can look at the song in a new way and reinvent it. And I think they still work. So I think that's maybe why I'm so joyful singing it, because I love them so much. Nobody forced me to sing these songs. I get to choose them. You know, I love it.
They're writing songs of love, but not for me. Ah, lucky stars above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more clouds of gray than any Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to fall and get that way. I hope, alas, and also lack a day. Although I can't dismiss the memory of his kiss, I guess he's not for me.
What has the response been so far now that the album's been out?
It's been really good. I've gotten some very nice reviews. You know, it's scary because it's, you know, my first album. I'm not new to singing or performing, but I never really did an album. So I've gotten really nice response. People have appreciated the theatricality of it and the jazz aspect of it and the song choices. And they've said nice things about my performance, which, of course, I love to hear. It's doing well on the jazz charts, and I've gotten a lot of love on Spotify. And so it just keeps going. I'm trying to, you know, take it on tour a little bit. I'm hopefully planning to, you know, do it out of town, a little bit of an album tour here and there. So,
oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have, I think we can talk about this. You have an album celebration event happening.
I do. If anyone's around New York City, I am doing an album release celebration Friday, November 7th at Chelsea Table and Stage in New York City, which is in Chelsea. And it's going to be my full trio. We're going to be doing all the tracks from the album, plus a kind of a preview of what I'm working on next, which will be really fun. So I'm excited about that if you're in or around New York City.
Are you allowed to talk about a preview of what you're doing next? Or?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I'm working on some Cole Porter.
Oh.
Makes sense. So I'm going to be previewing this really amazing arrangement of a song we're doing. It's a famous song, but it's a really super, super difficult, cool arrangement we've been working on that's going to really test me. I think it's really fun and up-tempo. So I'm going to work on a Cole Porter show next. I did a little bit of a teaser of it a year ago. I did a show called Cole Porter and the Bossa Nova, where I kind of married my love of those together. I would say the first time I ever heard Night and Day, Cole Porter's most famous tune, was, you know, Sergio Mendez's album, and that was a bossa nova version. As a kid, I didn't know who Cole Porter was. I didn't know the song, but it always stuck with me. So I kind of took that idea, added some bossa nova twists to some of the Cole Porter things, along with bossa nova songs, some in Portuguese, which I've been learning a little bit of Portuguese. So I'm going to be doing Cole Porter next. So
and that could potentially lead to a second album.
Yeah, people are already saying, well, what's the follow-up album? I said, oh my God, it's only been released.
I know people don't realize how much work and time goes into an album.
It took me, you got to come up with the arrangements, and then you got to learn them and test them out and then be so comfortable. Like you said, my joy came through because I loved singing and I was so comfortable. It takes well over a year to do a full album. Some people do EPs, which I always thought was just like an extended version of a song, but now I guess they're smaller versions of albums, like 5 or 6 songs. Mm-hmm. So I might do something like that. I feel like I'm going to release some of those maybe if I get back into the studio next spring to have some more. Now that I've figured out how to do it and I love the studio, I love my engineer, I love my team, I feel like, okay, I know how to do this now. It's not so hard.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, now.
Well, you could. I mean, you could do that. I mean, I know another jazz cabaret performer who is in has been doing that this year. She's been releasing, like quarterly, she's been releasing EPs, and then ultimately it will be released as a full album. Yeah. So it's sort of like releasing it in fourths, and then there'll be like a full collection at the end. So, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think just our attention span is like, you know, it's kind of like you got to feed the machine. Once you start it, putting out an album and you're having so much fun and I'm, you know, having a lot of success with it, you can't just be gone for a couple of years. You really kind of got to do it. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about that part. Fortunately, I know, you know, tons of songs as just kind of choosing. And there's like 4 Gershwin songs that I recorded that we did not put on the album. We didn't have room for everything. Mm-hmm. One of the things I learned is when you're doing a CD, which I did for my publicist, I'm also selling them on my website, but it only holds so much space.
Yeah.
So it's 53 minutes. And that's something I didn't actually think about that. So I have a few unreleased songs, which are great songs. One of my favorites, which I'm going to do in the album release, is Isn't It a Pity, which is such a great song. You must know the song. It has such great, crazy lyrics. I love them. They crack me up. So that I'm going to be doing the cabaret, and I think I'm going to release a few Gershwin songs in the spring that didn't make the album, and then do some more new ones and new other composers in the spring.
As we get to our final questions here about George and Ira Gershwin, as I mentioned before, I always encourage listeners to listen to an album from beginning to end. So this is sort of a two-parter question. So if a listener is listening to your album from beginning to end, and they are someone who is totally unfamiliar with George and Ira Gershwin, what would you hope that they would take away from listening to your album?
I really want them to come away with a sense of joy and hopefulness, because those songs are written, some of them in 1924 and up into the mid-30s. And I feel like the things that were happening then are still happening today, and the stresses people have. For example, in the song Love Is Here to Stay, the verse is, the more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers and how it all will end. And that, every time I sing that song live or that verse, people are like, oh my gosh, it could have been written today. But there's always a sense of hopefulness. Love is here to stay. And that's what I want people to come away with, the sense of things will get better. There is love and happiness and joy out there. And I think when you listen to the songs, and the charming lyrics and the hopefulness hopefully walk away feeling better and feeling happier.
And then kind of flipping the question a little bit, if the listener is someone who is very familiar with the Gershwin catalog and the songs, what do you hope that they take away from your album after they've listened to it?
Well, I hope they can pay attention to the songs that we mentioned that are more unusual. I think they might be thrilled by that because they may not have heard those songs. And I think it would be a reminder to everybody that the Gershwin catalog is very, very deep. There are so many great songs in there that a lot of it is, you know, remains undiscovered. And if you spend a little time kind of going down the rabbit hole, looking into this great music, it deserves to be heard. Some of the less popular songs are still great songs. They just maybe didn't make the hit parade back then. But I hope maybe they're inspired to kind of keep listening to Gershwin and discovering new songs that they didn't know before.
Yeah, I think it also reminds people that there's never a bad time for another Gershwin album.
Yeah, that's what I said in my liner notes. I was like, there's always room for more Gershwin in our lives. I feel like it makes people happy. I've had people come up to me after my cabaret show and say, thank you for doing that because it was such a joyful experience to hear those songs. It made me feel so happy and so light. And with the craziness in the world, they walked away feeling better. And I hope that's what comes across.
So I want to remind people, if they're going to be in New York City on Friday, November 7th, they can see Juliet at Chelsea Table and Stage, where she will be doing her album celebration event. And also, where can people find you online? Where would you like people to find you?
I have my website, Juliet Ewing. It's JuliettEwing.com. Has all of my stuff, has my calendar, has snippets of the album, what I've been working on. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as the Juliet Set, which is what I use when I play with my trio. So you can find me there. I do lots of posting.
Yes.
You can find me.
Yes, I will include a link to your website here on the radio page. And where would you like people to, well, can they purchase the album through your website? Would that be the best place to do it?
Yeah, if you want a physical CD, which I still have, which is really fun because of beautiful liner notes. And a lot of people, surprisingly, still have CD players. I have.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, we know that the sound is better on a CD anyway. We always, you know, people right. who love music, agree with that. But you can buy the CD on my website. You can also hear it, stream it on all the major streaming platforms that are out there. That's
right.
Everywhere.
But as I tell people, if you want to stream it, that's okay. But it doesn't put a whole lot of moolah in Juliet's pocket. It does better if you purchase a downloaded copy, a digital copy, or even better, purchase a CD, a physical CD. Because that actually puts money in her pocket, which means that we may get a Cole Porter album next.
Exactly. So, that's what we're hoping for.
Right.
Sell George to get to Cole, right?
That's right. Yes. Purchase George and you'll get Cole. So that's the most important thing. So I want to thank Juliet for being here. It's been wonderful chatting with you.
It's been wonderful to follow. Thank you.
And again, congratulations on the album. It is called Simply Swonderful, The Magic of Gershwin. And it's a terrific album. It really is. I think it's a wonderful album to add to your collection. It really is.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
It's wonderful. It's marvelous. You should care for me. Soft and nice, it's paradise, it's what I love.